I have always believed in miracles.
And that is why you will never hear me mention his name.
Deliver Brexit. Unite the country.
We will make America great again.
Views on News with Mark Latham.
New South Wales leader of One Nation, Mark Latham, joins me on a Wednesday. Normally it's a Thursday, but he's in Parliament tomorrow, so he's joining me this afternoon. Hello, Mark.
G'day, Brent. It's good to be with you. With a busy sitting week, it's good that we can catch up for a chat. Thank you.
Pleasure. Always nice to talk to you. And we always do get calls and emails after you've been on the show and say that you make a lot of sense. So people that are listening to us like what you've got to say, Mark.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. You know, it's good feedback.
It is.
You know, it's a representative democracy, so if the people you're representing think you're headed in the right direction, well, that's all you need to keep going.
Let's start with Sydney's lockout laws. It's been, I saw an article this week where they said some of the advocates have said that it's turning Sydney into a global laughing stock, a long-time opponent to the laws. Or there are many long-time opponents to the laws, I suppose, is calling for an end to the nanny state approach and the fun police on the Sydney's pubs and clubs. There was a meeting at the beginning of this week. I read an article there where Clover Moore had attended. How's it going, Mark?
Well, I was at that meeting on Monday where Clover Moore spoke because I'm on the lockout review committee. And I suppose the most stunning bit of information was that there's been a mistake in the crime statistician in New South Wales. They double-counted Potts Point. And once you get the stats right, in fact, there's been none or very little improvement in the number of alcohol-related assaults in the Sydney CBD. They certainly come down in King's Cross.
Right.
But in Sydney CBD, there's no improvement there on the law and order front. So if you're not making that improvement, why would you be destroying tourism, jobs, investment, nightlife, people having fun with no tangible impact? And you look at other parts of New South Wales, they've had dramatic declines in the number of alcohol-related assaults with no lockout laws. You know, near where I am at Campbelltown, the figures have come down by 71% over the past decade, which I think indicates a improved social attitude about drinking. I don't think young people go in for the binge drinking or the fight culture that might have been around 20 or 30 years ago. So that improvement in social attitudes is a very good sign and confirmation that these lockout laws, which are actually known as the Newcastle solution because they started in Newcastle, were spread to Sydney, they're certainly not needed the way they were 5 years ago.
I see that in one of the articles I was referring to, that your group, and you were there because I see you in the picture, you went for a very productive night out in King's Cross in June this year. What was that?
Well, King's Cross, the centre of Sydney. We spoke to Justin Hemmes, who runs the Ivy Club in George Street, Sydney. He told the tale of woe of how his business has basically dried up after midnight and, you know, international embarrassment. The famous singer Madonna, no bigger name internationally than Madonna, she had a show in Sydney, turned up at his club at 1:35 a.m. and missed the lockout by 5 minutes. She couldn't get in. And, you know, she'd have 50 people in the entourage all wanting to have a post-show drink.
Yeah.
And with Twitter and the like, you know, if Madonna gives Sydney a bagging, I don't know if she did, but we run the risk that if these big names give Sydney a bagging, that international reputation takes a real blow because they'd have millions of Twitter and other social media followers. So we can't continue this level of humiliation. The great Madonna can't get a drink at 1:35 a.m. after the show. But elsewhere, we travelled through Darlinghurst, once one of the most diverse, active nightlife areas, totally dead. There were some stats on Monday that women in particular feel less safe on the streets because there's no one around. You know, so that's not a good sign. And then in King's Cross, the Cross has changed fundamentally. It's only half sleazy now because it's had a big residential growth, apartments and the like. So these laws have changed all of Sydney and King's Cross and Darlinghurst, in most cases for the worst. I think King's Cross has improved, but certainly Sydney CBD and Darlinghurst, is tragic to see the destruction of businesses, jobs and investment.
I remember as a boy going to King's Cross with my mum and dad, and as I grew up and got older, it was still a wonderful place to go and have a night out in King's Cross. And it was safe. You felt safe walking down the street in King's Cross in those days.
Yeah, well, you'd feel safer now because there's not much happening.
Yeah,
you know, there's still people around, but it's only a shell of what it was. You know, I don't know if it can ever come back, and some of the aspects you wouldn't want them back because there was corruption and drug use and the like, but You'd certainly say it's been cleaned up and sanitised, but the real tragedy is the Sydney CBD, where, you know, international and domestic tourists would gravitate, of course, and if people can't have a drink, a bite to eat, a bit of fun after midnight, well, they'll go somewhere else.
Absolutely. Let's talk the China-US relationship. There was an article I was reading this morning, Mark, I think it was in the New York Times, and it said if you think the United States-China trade dispute is going to be easily resolved, you're not paying attention. It's so much deeper than you think and so much more dangerous. Can you see the two presidents getting together and having a discussion and sorting this problem out?
Well, I hope so. I'm a great supporter of the Trump presidency, as you know, Brent, but I think his one error has been this trade dispute with China. We don't want protectionism. That hurts Australia. We don't want a trade dispute between these two big countries because, quite frankly, the way to have a harmonious world in a security sense and the way to have a growing economy is trade. We all know that in World War II, Japan thought they needed to expand by invading countries to get resources. The benefit of free trade is that no one has to invade a country to get resources to power their economy. They just buy them on the global economic market. So open trade helps to avoid diplomatic tension and even worse, conflict between nations. So I think it's got that benefit, and Australia should be arguing for China, with whom we trade a lot, and the United States, where we have a security relationship, that we want as much trade between those two big nations as possible. It's good for Australia, and I think it's good for international harmony.
Can Australia play a role in this?
Well, you'd think so. We just had Mike Pompeo, the US Secretary of State, here over the weekend. They actually had their meetings here in the New South Wales Parliament building. So we do have the ear of senior people in the Trump administration. We do have access to the Chinese leadership. The relationship there got a bit frosty under Malcolm Turnbull. I think it's one of the goals for Scott Morrison to play a bigger role here. Mm-hmm. And whether it's at international forums like the G20 or APEC, bilateral relationship to talk to these countries as much as possible and can persuade them of the argument that free trade is in everyone's interests much more than closing down trade and building up diplomatic tensions.
So in the last 24 hours, Peter Costello's come out and warned that market gyrations could hurt superannuation savings if tensions between Washington and Beijing continue. Now, Josh Frydenberg has today said don't overreact to the turmoil on the world markets. I mean, this talk is obviously not doing any good either.
Well, that's true. Probably the Treasurer's got it right. It's not a time to panic or overreact. And in fact, Australia in our own trading situation, I heard a report this morning, we're going to turn a balance of payments surplus, that includes a trade surplus, for the first time since 1975, the time of the Whitlam government. So our own trading circumstances, despite the sluggishness in the domestic economy, Australia is trading more successfully than ever before and have built up surpluses that we haven't seen in decades. So that's a very good thing. So we don't want the United States and China to have a prolonged trade dispute and put up tariff barriers that hurt us. But a lot of the Australian news is actually quite good and no reason for panic.
Good. I see that North Korea has accused the United States of inciting military tension by holding joint military exercises with South Korea. The claims were made at a United Nations conference on disarmament in Geneva, where the North Korean diplomat said that Pyongyang would take measures to defend the country. The diplomatic spat, of course, comes after North Korea has launched two missiles into the area, and that is it's the fourth rocket test, I think, in less than 2 weeks.
Well, yeah, I think North Korea is the last country to complain about military exercises and what might be seen as provocative acts. I mean, there's no need for North Korea to have a nuclear program. There's no need for North Korea to be wasting money on firing missiles into the sea. Again, it comes back to trade. North Korea should look to China, which opened up its economy in the 70s and 80s. They traded, they worked hard, and they've lifted hundreds of millions of people out of poverty. And the problem in North Korea is that the regime there to galvanise public support behind them, they think they need to do it by military build-up instead of helping people economically. You know, in North Korea it's been desperate. Sometimes they eat the bark off the trees. Open up that economy, that sick economy, trade, and build the prosperity that you find in all the surrounding nations, South Korea, Japan, and China. So I don't think we should be taking North Korea's protests at the UN seriously. In fact, we should be telling them to head in the opposite direction.
Are you surprised at the, I suppose, the trust, can I use that word, that President Trump has put in the leader of North Korea?
Well, they're a pair of characters. That's probably what you'd say. They're sort of kings of the unexpected. I think Trump's attitude is it's better to find a relationship with North Korea than have hostilities that just escalate and escalate.
Mm.
Now, the United States has the whip hand, of course. If there was a problem, if the North Koreans were insane enough to ever launch anything at the US, well, that would be a very lopsided fight and would end pretty quickly. So he's got the whip hand in that regard, and I rather think that Trump is trying to push North Korea down that economic development path to open up their economy. It's good for the United States. And to get North Korea off the sick economy list, and they won't need their nuclear weapons. So I think his strategy is right. You might remember at the first summit they held, Trump and his people made a point of letting the media know about the economic plans that they had, foreign investment going in North Korea, trying to build up their economy. We've lost sight of a lot of that rhetoric, but hopefully the Trump administration can get back to it. But, you know, it's better for these guys to be talking to each other. They're both obviously unorthodox in the diplomatic circles, and hopefully they can sort something out.
Okay, Paul Keating was on telly last night. He criticised the tax policies that Labor took to the May federal election under Bill Shorten. He said that the party had failed to understand the middle-class economy created during the Hawke-Keating years.
It failed to understand the middle-class economy that Bob Hawke and I created for Australia. And so much of Labor Party's policies were devoted to the bottom end of the workforce and the community, paid for by cuts in tax expenditures. If the cuts in tax expenditures had have been employed in reducing tax rates, then it would have been a big tax reform and, I believe, a much more successful outcome.
However, he should have said this before the election. I mean, he was front and centre in the front row, happy to take all the applause at the launch of the campaign. Probably it would have been the ideal time to say those sort of things then rather than after the election, Mark.
Well, exactly, and even worse than sitting in the front row at the campaign launch, he penned with Bob Hawke, it turned out to be Bob Hawke's last public statement, they penned a joint letter saying that Shorten has got it right, Shorten's economic direction is a continuation of Hawke-Keating economic reforms. Now, that was bunkum in the lead-up to the federal election, and it's just unfortunate that Paul Keating, his comments last night, while 100% correct now, are directly opposite of what he was telling the Australian people before the election. And the comments last night, their credibility is weakened because you can't zigzag like that. You can't say before the election, Shorten's fantastic, and then after the election, he had it all wrong. If Keating really did believe what he said last night, he shouldn't have been making any comment in the federal election campaign. No comment should have been his consistent refrain. So, you know, Paul Keating, he's got to be a bit more consistent.
That's the word.
At the moment, it looks like he's losing the plot.
And we won't accuse him of that. I can't afford the law case.
Well, I mean, in terms of inconsistency, I'm sure he's still sharp as a tack, but people would be saying, well, hang on, you can't say one thing 10 days before the election and then the exact 180-degree opposite months after the election in bagging Shorten. So credibility matters, and I think it's unfortunate that he and Bob Hawke put out a statement. It wasn't accurate about Shorten's plan, but maybe they felt, you know, they needed to for Labor tribal reasons, but it certainly diminishes what Keating said last night.
Finally, the government has rejected Christina Keneally's calls to ban a far-right British writer from Australia over misogynistic, racist and homophobic tweets. She tried hard, but she didn't succeed in the end.
Well, I'm speaking at that conference with this bloke from Breitbart. He's not on the same stage as me, but there's a conference on Friday and Saturday in Sydney. It's attracted international speakers like Nigel Farage, who's obviously the hero of Brexit in the United Kingdom. Look, you know, Christina Keneally used to sit down in the New South Wales Parliament and listen and take advice from someone like Eddie Obeid in the New South Wales Labor Caucus. So having listened to Eddie Obeid, who now notoriously is in jail, is she an expert on who the rest of us should be listening to? You know, honestly, you know, the public, Brent, the public's over this hectoring, social engineering approach where Keneally basically says, all you people out there are so dumb, you can't listen to this bloke because he might hypnotise you. But Australians are smart, active, and if I want to listen to this fellow and I think he's speaking rubbish, the great thing about our country, the Aussies will stand up and say, hey, mate, that's wrong. You've got that 100% wrong. So, you know, we're a country of free speech and intelligent people, and we can handle these speakers without Nanny Keneally telling us who we can sit in the same room with.
Well, I think it was said in the article that we're a nation with a long and proud history of free speech, and long may that continue.
Well, we invited Christina Keneally here. She was originally an American. So she was allowed to come here, and I agree with 99% of what she says. I'm not saying ban her. So, come on, we've got to have some common sense here and allow people to speak and trust in the intelligence of the audience to agree with things that are sensible and disagree with stuff that might be rubbish.
Always a pleasure to talk to you. You always make good sense. That's why we like to talk to you. So thank you for your time this week. We'll catch up with you next Thursday.
Okay, thanks, Brent.
Thank you, Mark. Mark Lay-